From NPR News, I'm Tony Cox. Today, we continue our four-part roundtable discussion on identity in the United States. The question of how we see ourselves and how others see us is in part shaped by our respective traditions and customs. But what happens when we become more culturally integrated and traditions and customs begin to meld, mold, and mesh? Evidence of this surging cross-culturalization today is seen in popular music, particularly hip-hop, but it's also part of 21st century food, fashion, film, and sports. Today, on part two of our series, we look at identity through cross-cultural experiences. Our panelists include Richard Rodriguez in San Francisco, author of a three-volume memoir about being Mexican-American. His latest book is titled Brown. Deborah Dickerson in Albany, New York, a former U.S. News and World Report editor and author of The End of Blackness. Ara Hahn in Boston is co-editor of Asian American X, a collection of personal stories from young Asian Americans. And Russell Means here in Los Angeles, a veteran actor and activist best known as a leader of the American Indian takeover of Wounded Knee on the Sioux Indian Reservation in 1973. His best-selling autobiography, Where White Men Fear to Tread, is currently in its 10th printing. I began by asking Russell to describe how cross-cultural experiences define who we are.
I reject all forms of colonialism. I do not believe in white privilege. I do not believe it should exist. I do not believe in any form of colonialism whatsoever, robbing me of what my ancestors are all about. And I'm speaking mostly for the people who are still struggling to reject the European mode of way of life.
So you're opposed to this cross-culturalism that we're seeing? You don't like that?
Oh, very much so. Mm-hmm. There isn't anything wrong with being an individual. There isn't anything wrong with honoring your ancestor. There isn't anything wrong with continuing in your ancient way of life, because that life has worked for so long. It's a source of pride, and it makes you the center of the universe. Every human being is the center of the universe. And if we followed the matriarchal way of life, we wouldn't be having this discussion today.
Well, certainly across the country, we have seen just the opposite taking place with regard to cross-cultural things. I'm thinking, for example, here in Southern California, restaurants like the Kosher Burrito, just to pull one out of the sky. Ara, food seems to be one of the main ways that cultures have been crossing lines.
Food is a concrete expression of culture that people like to try. It's become safe to try different cultures through food. So yes, I think food is a nice vehicle. Music also. There have been Indian Bhangra influences in hip-hop. Hip-hop has always been open to influence by different cultures. I think there are a variety of different things in the way we dress and the way we style our hair. One of my Asian American friends sports dreadlocks, and you know, whether you think that that's kosher or not is depends on who you are and what your experiences have been. But for her, that's how she chooses to express her identity.
I want to ask Deborah this, because do you feel a sort of territorialness about your culture? And when you see, for example, in the hip-hop, just using hip-hop as an example, as it is spread through other cultures and used commercially on television to sell soap and all these other things, do you feel in any way slighted by that, or is it a good expression that hip-hop has crossed cultural lines?
Well, there's a couple of different things there that we need, strands that need to be teased out. The fact that hip-hop is crossing boundaries, I think it's a good thing, except insofar as what I think is bad in hip-hop gets exported. And that doesn't have anything to do with cross-pollination. That just has to do with what I think is the downside of hip-hop. So that commercializing force is pretty much unstoppable. I'm concerned with the minstrel aspect of it, in that what's being exported is the dregs of Black culture. I find that I become sort of a conspiracy theorist when you know that something like 70% of hip hop is bought by white suburban male teenagers. And I have to wonder, well, why not something that's a little more positive in Black culture? So it worries me the extent that is seen as acceptable and sort of reassuring in Black culture. And those kids are going to grow up and be captains of industry and all that sort of stuff. And I wonder about this foundational level of their purchase on what they think is Black culture, how that factors in when they're sitting on a jury and when they're approving loans. So I find that I worry that that has been so widely diffused.
Richard, I want to ask you, because language is another area where cultures begin to mix and blend. Words become parsed into new words. Does it offend you at all to see, first of all, Latinos who do not speak Spanish?
Oh, no, not at all. As a Latino who speaks very bad Spanish, my relationship to Spain is not the problem here. My relationship to the unspoken languages of my Indian ancestors is more the problem. But as an American, I've always argued, rather like H.M. Mencken, that we do not speak English in this country. We speak American. That as early as the 1850s, Britons were beginning to understand that there was something about the American tongue which was different from the tongue of the British Isles, that they were what they call Negroisms on our tongue and American Indian words. And then come the European immigrants from all quarters, and there are suddenly German words and Italian words. And now we use, we speak of fatwas and burritos and samurai. The languages of the world join on the American tongue. I find that basic impurity about an American identity very thrilling. And to get back to something that Russell was saying, I take the opposite position. I find the energy of this moment to be very brown, which is what I called my last book. And I don't mean pigmentation, I mean mixture. I mean the existential state of being impure and the way cultures are borrowing each other from each other's tradition, are manufacturing third cultures from the recreation of cultures to be very much of what it means to be modern.
Is that good or bad? I'm not sure. You like it or don't like
well,
that?
Well, it is human. If I live next door to you, I'm going to start walking like you. I'm going to start sounding like you. It's not a matter of my choosing it. Look at most Americans look like their dogs, and nobody ever bothers to say it. It isn't that they decided to look like their collie. It's that they walk their collie every morning, and after a while, they both begin to look like each other. That's not a choice. Everything in America is not a choice.
So it's inevitable, you're saying.
There's a biology to the Lone Ranger becoming very much like Tonto. And they both begin to look and sound like each other after time.
I vehemently disagree, and this is Russell. I'm sorry. I see the genocide of my people on a day-to-day basis, and I can't disagree more. They are not incorporating American Indian in any part of the American culture. The American culture is a genocidal culture. It's a greed culture, and it's a patriarchal culture. And I'm sorry, I understand colonialism, because colonialism is the eradication of self. And if you can't see that what's happening in America as the eradication of the individual and the eradication of peoples into one mass Bushite, I'm sorry, then you're missing the point. I'm sorry, you do not become like your neighbor if you have respect for your ancestors and you have respect for yourself and the universe.
Now, it's one thing to say you do not. It's another thing to say you should not. I think part of Richard's argument, I don't want to speak for you, Richard, is that it is happening. Like it or not, it's happening. You're saying that it should
Absolutely.
Not be. And let me ask you, Russell Means, since you're sitting here, because I'm confused by this myself. I was of the opinion maybe a decade ago or longer that it was an insult to say or to call you an Indian. An American Indian. And the way to say or to address you properly was to say Native American. And
you
yet
see what
today,
I mean.
But today you hear American Indians using that phrase regularly.
Let me say this. That's part of colonialization. The government. I happen to have been in Washington, D.C. on the very day the Interior Department, Under Secretary Harrison Lesh, decided to call all prisoners of the United States Native Americans. Okay, that's American Samoans, the real Hawaiians, the Aleuts, the erroneously called Eskimos, the American Indians, and the Micronesians. All of us are lumped in as Native Americans by the Department of Interior. I prefer Indian because I know it is a bastardization of two Spanish words, en Dios, in with God. I love the word American because the very first peoples that were discovered, listen to me, that were met by the conquistadores in what is now called Colombia was the Indian nation called America, who called themselves America. The word America is a Spanish pronunciation, and it's a Spanish spelling.
So you prefer to be called American Indian. Now, Richard, Hispanic is a term created by the U.S. Census Bureau and not a term that was created out of Latino culture. So talk about that for a moment and whether or not and why that has stuck and whether it's appropriate. And what do you prefer to be called?
Well, you know, I don't know whether I have a single word that I would prefer to be called by, but I mean, here Russell and I are engaging in this debate, and we are both speaking the same language. The factor of our common language is such an overwhelming assimilating factor in our lives that it's like, you know, the other day a Latina in one of my college audiences got up and she said, she started screaming at me. She said she was all of this in Spanish. She was proud to be Azteca and so forth and so on. And I said, at least notice the irony of what you are doing. You are telling me in Spanish how proud you are to be an Aztec. You know, history is filled with ironies. And one of the ironies is this conversation we're having. Here we are using a common language to talk about our dissimilarity and to deny the way we influence each other, to borrow from one another. I find the great breakthrough right now in American history, rather what Deborah is, as I hear her saying, is this admission of impurity. When Colin Powell tells us that he is of four races, when Tiger Woods tells us that he is of five races, when Strom Thurmond, his daughter comes out of the shadows and says, he's my daddy, this man who stood on the floor of the Senate and spoke against race mixing. I think when African Americans begin to talk about their plantation owner relatives, when American Indians talk about their relationship to the cowboy, their biological relationship to the cowboy, I think we will be better for it. I think this notion of purity is an impossibility in our culture.
That was Richard Rodriguez wrapping up today's discussion on identity. We also heard from Deborah Dickerson, Ara Han, and Russell Means. Tomorrow, we continue with part 3 of our roundtable as we discuss sexual politics and identity.